Baseline.
To baseline.
Very good execution of a two-on-one fast break.
Coast.
To coast.
Takes it all the way down the lane.
This.
Two-hand jam.
This is the NBA Today.
The NBA Today.
What's going on? I hope everybody had a good weekend. NBA Today podcast. I'm Ryan Russillo. You can email us, nbatoday@espnradio.com. So we have a lot to do today. Lee Klein is the co-president, owner of Five Star Basketball Camps. I know some of our listeners are familiar with what Five Star is. Others are not. Five Star is basically the elite camp for high school players and younger players coming up. You get a grade at the end of it. Moses Malone was said to have scored a seven star, even though you can't get higher than five. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the guys. Tyreke Evans was up there. Lance Stephenson, a little bit about the tournament. And just kind of the overall thought of where he thinks basketball is going. It's a little different, so we're hoping you guys will enjoy that one. But what I do want to do is kind of recap a little bit from the weekend and some of the rumors and stuff that are going on. And, you know, I want to start with Cleveland because they have the best record and not because it was the game I was most locked in on. But, you know, Cleveland just toying with Boston. Boston thought they would get back into it a couple times. Not the case. Cleveland's the better team. Cleveland is now... I like this line from Brian Windhorst, one of the writers who's covered this team pretty well over the years, saying that Cleveland's played 8.5 games without Shaq and being Big Z now, and they're 8-1. Of course, the half game being the game where Shaq was actually hurt against the Celtics. But it's what I felt from the beginning is Cleveland's going to find a way to be just as good without Shaq. And when you look at those plus minuses over the course of the season, Cleveland's a plus 10. This was going into last week, so I used this number last week, but I'll reuse it just to enforce how important it is. Cleveland a plus 10 without Shaq, a plus 3.5 with Shaq on the court. So, like I said, he's there for Dwight Howard, and that's what'll happen. Anderson Varejao was terrific yesterday. Gosh, is he good. You know, he wanted that big, big contract. I don't know that he would have gotten that contract anywhere else except for Cleveland trying to do whatever they can always to spend money to prove it to LeBron. I still don't necessarily love it, but I think when you look at Varejao, you have to say, well, wait, just because his skill sets aren't paid for around the league, then he's not supposed to get paid. Like, in a way, you could say he's more valuable because he doesn't need a ton of shots. He doesn't need looks. He doesn't need to take away from other guys. He just goes out there and works, and that's what he's done. Boston on the other side, like, I hear a lot of people say, well, hey, Boston, you know, they're still 41-24. That's good for a four seed, in the East. That would actually put them at the eighth tied for ninth best record with Oklahoma City. So think about that. The Celtics have the same record as Oklahoma City. And if you break it down a little bit further, since they were 23-5, Boston is 18-19. So they're an 18-19 team. And you know what? That's a better indicator of who they are as a basketball team than the team that was 23-5. So you have that. And speaking of teams struggling, Toronto now has lost 5 in a row. They're 1-9 in their last 10. And Hollinger, I thought it was great because we had touched on this last week about where Toronto was as a defensive unit. They were off the charts bad in the beginning of the month. They'd turned things around a little bit, and then they've now gone through this stretch of about 9 to 12 games where their defensive efficiency is even worse than it was in the first month, what I actually thought was a bit surprising there. They just don't stop anybody. And we go back to that Laker game from last week. There's no way they're ever going to stop anybody. And then they foul a ton as well, and all the free throws that they're giving up. But Chris Bosh recently was upset, calling out his teammates a little bit. I thought Hollinger's piece was interesting because he pointed to an overall philosophical problem. Like, this team philosophically doesn't seem to understand the importance of defense, and their head coach, after bad losses, will talk about the fact that, well, we didn't do anything, close out shots. Like, Triano will start talking about offensive stuff where you're like, that's not really the problem here. When you run down this, so they beat the Knicks March 5th. They then gave up 114 points to Philadelphia at home. Sunday Raptors game. They should never lose them. They lost to them by 13. They hang with L.A., even though L.A.'s playing their worst basketball of the season, which is still better than most, but still, as we all remember that one, Kobe hit the game winner with a second left. Then they go the next night down to Sacramento and give up 113 to the Kings and lose by 23. Then this weekend, they give up 124 to Golden State. They lose to them by 12, and last night losing to Portland by 11, giving up 109 points there. So they are going to come back home. They have Atlanta, Oklahoma City, two more tough teams. I wouldn't have thought that Toronto would fall out of the playoff race, and obviously they're not out of the playoff race, But Chicago, who can't win any games either, they've lost seven in a row. Although there is word they're going to get Joakim Noah back. He's already doing some light treadmill work. Treadwheel is not a word. And they think that with the plantar fasciitis that he'll be back. So, you know, that's one of those injuries that you never really know. And if he just wants to try to toughen it out, the hard part is once you have that injury, getting loose. Like, you can get loose, and then when you stop, your foot's going to cramp up again, and it's going to feel like it's taking forever to get loose up and down the court. I mean, it's a thing you can play with, but it really, really hurts. So Chicago, a game behind them. They're actually three games under 500 now, but that's the only real concern you have. The Knicks, 28.5 out. So they're 8.5 behind Chicago in that number 9 spot. Milwaukee continues to win. They've won 6 in a row, 9 of their last 10, and they're actually 5 games behind the Boston Celtics. Will they catch them? No, I don't know. There's still 17 games to go. They'd have to make up 5 and 17. I don't know if that's going to happen. 5 back in the loss column there. Although Cheryl Miller on NBA TV this week had Milwaukee as number 4, not in the East, in the league. Yeah. So, you know, I guess she wins because I mentioned it. I really hate it when people just say really stupid stuff so we pay attention to it. But it worked. She had the Lakers out. She had Dallas as the number 1 team in the league, followed by Orlando, then Cleveland, I think, and then Milwaukee. Okay, moving on. In the Western Conference, Denver winning a bunch of games in a row now. They've won 6 in a row, and you know they're taking care of teams they're supposed to beat. I mean, they beat the Pacers, they win in Minnesota, they win in New Orleans, they take care of Memphis. They have a Portland win in there. No Kenyon Martin, though. So, you know, it's looking like he could be back in 3 weeks, they're saying. But in his absence, J.R. Smith has been solid. He's getting 18 points a game, and he's hitting 42% of his threes on top of that in the month of March. Carmelo's at 27. Chauncey's at 20. Nene, who just needs to be a little bit better offensively late in games, I think he has with 15-plus there. And the Birdman's getting 22 minutes off the bench. But, yeah, Kenyon Martin's played 2 games this month, has not played because of this knee, so we'll see where they're at. Basically, every team in the West has been winning. Every one of the top 8 teams is above 500 in their last 10. The Lakers are tied for the worst last 10 run with Utah, and that's only 6-4. Denver, 8-2. Dallas, 9-1. Oklahoma City's won 5 in a row. They're 8-2. 30-plus from Durant and Westbrook again this weekend. Phoenix is 7-3 in their last 10 with Barbosa back. San Antonio, who Mike Tirico told us on Friday that like he's starting to like them more and more, they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row. Portland has won 4 in a row, 8-2 in their last 10. So Portland's separated themselves pretty well from Memphis. There's a, you know, when you look at it and it's 5 games, you just start to say, okay, if the other team went 15-5, the other team's going to go under 500 for a team that's 13 above 500. It's probably not going to play out that way. So I don't know how great these playoff races are going to be. Essentially, all you have is Chicago and Toronto fighting it out for that last spot, because I still think Wade is good enough with Miami to just keep them into that top 6 or top 7 as these playoff races kind of round out, because there's really not that much to it like we've had in some other years. Let's go over a couple things that have come up. Kirk Heinrich. He has been suspended for Tuesday's game against the Grizzlies for making contact with an official during Friday night's game against the Heat. Heinrich saying, quote, on our ESPNChicago.com website, "I was following him. I was still upset. Then he turned, stuck his elbow out, and kind of bumped into me. Then I realized I better leave. I was following him, but I feel like I don't know what was going through his head or anything like that, but he stopped, stuck his shoulder and elbow out, and the contact was made." So pleading innocent there. Hollinger does continue with his look at Toronto and Chicago, saying the playoff odds pretty much see it as a two-team race. And it's at this point a toss-up, and he also points out it's a little weird just because you're dealing with two teams that are playing so poorly. Sean Livingston, we all remember him and the knee injury. Could have gone to Duke, come straight out of high school, was such a brilliant basketball player. Like, man, was this kid going to be good? He's had a couple different stints this year with the Heat and the Thunder. He signed a 10-day contract with the Wizards, and that always leads us to emails when people say, well, hey, what do you think he could do there? I'm going to guess not much. Like, that's why he's been on 3 other teams, because when they get him in, there's really not that much to get excited about. Also starting to hear more and more because of the way Evan Turner played for Ohio State during their Big Ten championship run and them getting a number 2 seed, that Turner could be the number 1 pick and not John Wall. I won't believe that unless it absolutely, you know, like I love Turner, and I actually felt like Turner was a guy, I couldn't understand why he wasn't ranked higher going back earlier last couple of years. I was like, man, that kid is pretty good. And The way he finished up last year and the way he's just dominated games this year and can do everything. And he's not like super athletic. He's not like an elite guy like John Wall, who is. I mean, John Wall's start-stop dribble is just stupid. Although, I think I pointed this out before, he does this thing with the ball on his hip where he keeps it there, which he's not going to get away with in the pros. Guys are going to slap that off of him, and it's going to go off out of bounds off of him, but it's a very, very small part of it. But point guards are just that much more important. And when you look back 2 years ago when it was just Beasley to be number one and then everybody after him, you saw what Derrick Rose could do and the run that he'd been on. I think other people, too, excited about the idea of what Chris Paul did with New Orleans, turning that franchise around. Darren Williams of the Utah Jazz, same thing, that's why Rose went number one. And Rose didn't have all the baggage that Beasley did. The baggage is maybe not the biggest reason why Beasley hasn't maxed out to the way we thought he could. I mean, he's still young, who knows. But he has lost some of that glow with Beasley and what he's going to be like in the future. Whereas Rose, you know, if he's not a top five point guard, he's what, number six or number seven? I mean, I might actually, if I redid it in my head now, I'm thinking he might be number five or number six right now. So that's why, as much as I love Turner, that's why Wall is going to go one. I know Minnesota thought, hey, well, they got Rubio and Flynn, they're still on the roster. They're going to take another point guard, you know, Indiana as well. Wouldn't it be a great, great setup there? But I still think that most of these guys will take Wall number one, just because it's a point guard, and he's still, if you look at the age thing there too, and it's like, you know, you're looking at a guy who's a freshman versus a guy that's been in the league for a few years. I want to get to a couple emails here.
Email NBA Today at ESPNradio.com.
We're just going to do this one more time. Our man Devin, very, very excited about the Milwaukee Bucks, and he should be. And he goes, the Skiles interview, sticking up for Brandon Jennings to get the Celts, pointing out Kobe's freebie free throws. This is your finest podcasting moment. By the way, the Bucks were a victim of Kobe's, one of his six game winners. Bucks are up four. He traveled and charged, given three free throws, put him in position to win. Bogut said afterwards, quote, if I tell the truth, I get fined. It was the worst. We're very happy with Devin here on the podcast. Really, I went after him pretty good, and I basically have been wrong since the Bucks have been terrific. I thought it was kind of a schedule thing, and at the point, it would make a lot of sense. But, you know, they're playing great basketball right now. So good for them. And, I was wrong. And he could have really let me have it. Like, we had a guy in the NBA chat that I do on Wednesdays. He, like, wouldn't let it go, the idea that I would even think Stephen Curry could actually be the rookie of the year. Like, wouldn't let it go, was freaking out about it. And it turned into one of those things that, like, everything I said was wrong and everything he said was clearly right. And I was like, this is really more of a difference of opinion thing, man. I'm like, Steph Curry has to deal with Monta Ellis taking 20-plus shots a game. Tyreek Evans doesn't have to do that because nobody else on the team wants to score. Evans has been way more consistent. I'll give you that. But I think philosophically, you could at least touch on that, right? Like, am I crazy? NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com to, like, think that Curry could at least be in the conversation. All right. This is from a young 30-year-old successful engineer. I don't even know if I've read this email yet. Pod Vader put it in, so let's see. What do we got? All right. Successful engineer by day, league pass addict by night. I work your typical 9 to 5, so to speak. I get home before 6. By 7 o'clock rolls around, I'm ready to go. I sit here in my man room. We've banned man room, man cave from the show. Sorry. Thank goodness the wife works late. That actually works out great. Kick my feet up and watch the NBA until my eyes fail me, which is usually halftime of the West Coast games. Just so you get a picture of my typical night of viewing, I have two 32-inch flat screen TVs, a 25-inch monitor in my room, so I'm watching two on the TVs and one on the NBA broadband. Sometimes on full slates, I'll pull out the laptop. Now, I know it's your job to watch the games and cover them, but does your typical emailer casual fan spend their nights like this? I don't think so. I think this is weird slash awesome. I mean, is watching 48 games a night something you hear often from podcast followers, or do I need to get a life or an NBA job? Thanks for taking my email. This is my first time sending one, but it won't be the last. I've been a devoted listener. Is that a word? Listener is definitely a word. For about 4 months now and haven't missed a podcast. Hope you get to take this one. Thanks again and keep up the good work. That's Southside Wendell. He also has a nickname. I think that's great, man. I think if you're into it enough that it's still fun, because I'll be honest with you, when I have to do this all the time, there are nights where I'm like, I just wish there was a night where I didn't have to watch anything. It happens like once every couple of weeks, and I know some of you are going to say, well, how could you say that? Well, I did. You know, like, I'm sorry. There are nights when you do sports every single day, and I wake up and I read all day, then I do the show, I get to the gym and I read while I work out, and then I get something to eat, and then I watch games all night until 1 a.m. And I'll tape some that I want to see and get up extra early in the morning to watch that, take notes, and then come in and do this. And I do that almost every day. So there are days where you're like, man, I'd like to just watch terrible reality shows tonight and just escape from it all. Doesn't happen that often, but it does. But I think that's great. My setup at home is I have one 50-inch TV, and then I have a 40-inch another that's off to the side, and I'll tape some games in my bedroom. I also have a media computer program that I'm able to do that, and I have the Synergy program, so I actually dial up 12-year-old Turkish boys playing in a, you know, like a CYO league. I watched some Rubio actually the other day. Maybe I'll do a Rubio breakdown. And then I'll get the laptop going if there's something I really, really need to watch. But for the most part, you can stagger it pretty well where if you just get into fourth quarters, because I think that's what a lot of guys will do, you'll go fourth quarters because then you really know what coaches like to do, what players they trust, sets that they like to run more often. But then there are teams where I'll be like, man, I haven't watched that team enough in the last week or so, last 2 weeks. I got to try to make sure I dedicate some time. Like I remember I hadn't watched much Pacers games for a while there, and I'm – now that I've watched a few the last week or so, I'm like, now I know I haven't been paying that much attention to the Pacers. So that's how I do it. All right, this is from Ben, and he's an Aussie in Taiwan. Oh, no, it's not. It's Bean. His name is Bean. Ben is his friend. First, LeBron changes his number to 6. Now Gilbert Arenas files paperwork to change his number to 6 next season as well. Pure coincidence, or do you think Gil is toying with LeBron, trying to get under his skin or something? Any bad blood between these two that you know of? Now, I know that LeBron's bounced him out of the playoffs a bunch of years in a row there. I just think the whole changing the number thing's kind of stupid. Just how about this? How about don't change your number? I know that sounds simple, and maybe I don't get it, and I know Jordan did it, but then he also changed it back to 23. Kobe did it, fine. You know, LeBron did it or is going to do it. But I do think it's funny that it's like, well, we want to honor Jordan by not wearing number 23, but then you're going to wear Russell's number? Big Russ, 11 championships, 13 years. Do the math, kid. Know your history. Also, want more inside stories of you chilling with Gary Payton and Chuck Knoblauch? Let me see. What do I have on tap? Well, I didn't do anything fun this weekend. Not really. Well, you know, I actually shouldn't say that. We had a St. Patrick's Day with the girlfriend and her friends, and I had to be a grown-up for a while, and then they all went to sleep, and I stayed up and watched basketball all night. That's basically what I did. I did sneak out for a little bit.
That doesn't sound like Gary Payton or Chuck Knoblauch.
No, Chuck Knoblauch would have kept it going. I tried to go Chuck Knoblauch late, but it was one of those like all day tired things. So by the end of the night, I was just tired and useless. Here we go. Darren in Vegas. Ryan, big fan of the show. I'll get to my point about Darko. Everyone thinks David Kahn is in the sharpest GM in the mix. Jury's still out. In the email, Darren says, my jury is still out. Does this guy have his own jury? I'm going to guess no. I think he's onto something with Darko signing and playing. Darko's going nowhere in the NBA, and it's certain he returns to Europe this summer. But as of right now, the Minnesota T-Wolves have an opportunity to strike gold with the primary sports media world in Europe via Darko. Oh, I see where this is going. The T-Wolves treat this kid like an absolute prince, give him more playing time than he's ever seen in his career, and even a starting gig. I'm sure he's staying in the best suites in Minnesota. And seeing the most welcoming front office since he was drafted in 03, the reason being when he returns to Europe, he has nothing but the utmost respect for the T-Wolves organization and the front office, gives the organization a glowing review to local media sources throughout Europe and FIFA basketball, and easily leaks back to the Rubio camp once everybody finds out how awesome he is. Sounds corny, but in the homer mind of David Kahn, I bet a few chips that this is his intention, seeing the season as a wash. When that deal first happened, it really made no sense at all. Because they actually had to give up money for this tryout. But then the way I looked at it again, it wasn't too bad, with how the money worked out. You know, is he really trying to do that? Like, is he going this far to try to pull this off? I don't know. I mean, he's played a ton of minutes, but then got scratched for being sick, in the loss to Sacramento. That was yesterday. But, you know, he's had 32 minute nights. He had a 12 point night in 27 minutes, 3 days ago. In a loss to San Antonio, you know, are they trying to do this to make Rubio like him or like the franchise, excuse me? And like, they're like, hey, let's bring in a European guy and make him like us. No, they're definitely not doing that. I like the theory. I think it's interesting, but I think more than anything, they want to try to look at him, give him minutes, and convince him to stick around because this team has been so desperate for any big man that looks like he can go out there and play. I still argue Darko has some skills and should be playing in this league, but it's a fit thing. It's sometimes it doesn't work out, opportunities, and it's also how committed you are. And I don't think Darko is ever the picture of commitment anywhere that he's been in his NBA career. We're speaking with the co-owner and president of Five Star Camp, and that is Five Star Basketball Camp, which I know a lot of our listeners probably remember hoping to get accepted to, or perhaps they got to play in. That is Lee Klein joining us now. Lee, how are you today?
Terrific. Great time of the year. Well, March Madness.
Yeah, this is your time. As we have in your bio here, you had 120 players in March Madness and 21 in the Final Four and 8 of the 10 starters in the championship game going back to last season. So I think it's safe to start with this. If you're not at five-star at some point in your high school career, then I really wonder what you can do in maxing out as a player, because obviously this is one of the things that it seems like most kids eventually hope and get to be a part of.
Well, you got to keep working on your game, for one. There are a lot of opportunities to play against so many great players. There's a lot of competition out there, but you got to strive to improve. And a lot of the great ones, the impact players that you see in the tournament this year, they went and they had that internal drive to keep getting better. And that's what you got to do if you're in high school now or if you're aspiring to be one of these great players that are that we're going to be following these next 3 weeks.
Well, when you get kids into the camp, what's the first thing that jumps out to you from some of the people that have not only had great college careers, but great pro careers?
I think there's a few things. One is the, do you refuse to lose? Do you compete? Do you compete every possession, every drill? Do you have that internal fire that separates you from maybe those that are with you athletically? I think another thing is your basketball IQ. Do you understand how to play the game? Do you make the people around you better? For instance, a kid, a five-star kid like John Wall, who makes other kids around him better, do you raise their game up to another level? Those are a couple of the intangibles outside of are you versatile? Can you use both hands? Can you extend your shooting range? Do you understand what to do when things aren't going well, how to get yourself a basket, what your go-to moves are? So there are definitely a few things within your arsenal, but I think the intangibles ultimately separate the good and the great.
Can you give me some examples of players that you see this not only now but at a young age when you first had them up at five-star?
Kids that are in the tournament now, guys like John Wall or Chris Wright, Isaiah Thomas from Washington, who's a terrific player. You know, Brandon Trish, who stepped in great for Syracuse as a freshman, Devin Eubanks, John Diebler. I mean, there's so many guys that you've seen. Tweedy Carter from Baylor, who was a prolific scorer in high school, that came to five star and started really the evolution of his game from being 5'9" scoring guard to being a lead guard and making people around him better. And what he's done for that program, to think Baylor, here you go, has an opportunity as a 3 seed to be something special in the tournament, and where they came from, that one player has been a real key to their success as a program.
I've read this, and I don't know if it's true, but is it true that when Moses Malone was a 5-star, he came away with 7 stars?
Well, he was the one player that came to camp and just thoroughly dominated, was, as we say, in essence, better than everybody else there. And there were a lot of big kids at camp, and Moses just showed that he was far superior. Of course, he then would later go on to be the first one to go from high school to the pros, and really, an all-time great NBA player.
So you will grade kids out, though. Like, every kid is graded to a certain number of stars, and I mean, that's the urban legend there, that he ended up getting 7. Is that true?
Right. Well, yeah, 5-plus was the highest that a kid could get. It's called a 5-plus, but uh-huh. He played, as they say, like a 7. So that's as far as that goes. Soft-spoken, but very, very well-spoken on the court.
You had Tyreke Evans up there. I know on the website for Five Star, you have some of the videos of how he performed. And it's interesting because I talked to a coach that had him and said one of the things about Tyreke that actually is a plus but can be a negative, so I guess it sounds a little contradicting, is that when he's playing with guys that he perceives that may be better than him, he'll defer too much. But now we see what he's doing in the NBA as a rookie, which I think is even more surprising to anybody, even the people that really believed in him. What did you see in Tyreke when he was a five-star?
You could tell how good he was. I mean, you could just see it on the court, the different things. He is unselfish, and sometimes a streaky shooter, but he could really, you know, he was in our super soft league, in our developmental league, and when there was an injury, he moved right up into our top league, our NBA, which had nine of this past year's draft picks in it. And he just stepped in and competed on the same level of the Johnny Flynns and the guys that were there. I mean, he was just as tough as any of them, even at a younger age. But unselfish, really great shooting range and a knack to getting to the basket. You really could not keep him from the basket. And I think that's what's making him so successful in the NBA this year.
Do you look at the overall skill set, and can you like explain the progression of where it is now when kids are entering the camp versus 10, 20 years ago, and like just the difference, the overall base skills that it seems that kids have today? Because I assume it improves, but I'm just wondering how it's become different.
Well, it's definitely different. I think on the top level, you have the physical abilities of the kids and what they can do at a younger age blows your mind away when you compare it to 15 years ago. What's missing, I think the two big things that are missing is the instinctual part of the game. Kids don't have the same instincts as maybe they did 15, 20 years ago and how to play the game. The spacing, the movement, some of the finer things that you really had to do in order to score. Scoring was seemed to be a lot tougher. You had to manage possessions. Now, because of the great abilities of the players, it's sort of a lost art. And I think that's one of the real big things. And I think the second thing is that's so tough is team play. I think that because you have great individuals and the sport's marketed as an individual sport, what you're missing is some of the team play, making the extra pass, the cross screens, a couple of the little things to get. It's not about your shot, but about the best shot for your team.
Do you like the game more now?
I think that, if you take it from a fan perspective, it's a much more exciting game because there's so many more players in it that could compete. And when you look and you talk about the evolution of the college game, for many years you could talk about five or six schools, and that's about it, that really had a chance to compete. Now you look at the college game, and you see, in this field of 65, you see, 30 very good teams, and you see great players scattered throughout this tournament. And I think from that perspective, it's a much better game.
Because when I heard, I think about a month ago, and they did an interview with Bobby Knight and Coach K, and they were sitting together, and he said, well, what do you like more about the game today? And there was a silence, and Coach Knight says, I think our silence is our answer. And it just feels like there's this element of basketball people that are kind of disgusted with the way the game's evolved, but I just would look at it and say, as you've said, it's just a little different. Like, maybe people don't use screens as well as they should, but maybe because they're so developed athletically, they don't have to worry about that as much. And I think there's an older school thing that never wants to accept where a game, and not even just basketball, where games are headed because of the change in the physicalness of style and just the evolution of the body. But you've gotten to see it over the course of so many years with all these different stars. I think it's kind of nice to hear you say, you like some of these changes as opposed to some people that just resist the idea that basketball has been even enjoyable the last 10, 20 years.
Well, sports has changed. I mean, we see the physical development and the performance enhancing and really the psychology of the athlete. I mean, it has completely changed, and it's not going away. So you could embrace it and look to improve upon it, or you can, you know, sit there in silence and sort of wish that it was back in the day. But I kind of remember, you know, it's like your dad or your grandfather when you started talking about the old-time baseball players.
Right.
And you sat there and say, you know, and you see the guys, and they'd say, yeah, but they're not quite like, you know, Mantle and Mays. It's a similar type of thing, I think, as generations go on and games evolve. People do miss some of the purity and some of the real aspect of the game that gets lost, but it's just the way time goes.
Now, give us some stories now of some of these names, some of the stuff that you can remember, maybe the development. Like, is there a guy that whenever you're at one of these banquets and you think of, like, here's a great anecdote, here's a good story, are there any of those that you could share with us and our listeners?
Well, I could tell you, we'll take one. You know, John Wall was a five stars, a rising sophomore, and nobody really knew. He had no national reputation. And I remember this is our Virginia camp in June, and we had, and with that, there were some great Carolina players, Marshall Moses from Oklahoma State, among a few. And I remember Brian Clifton, who helped get him to five-star program, said, take a look at this kid. He's going to be the best of all of them. And it was John Wall. Nobody, he had a good week, not a great week. He comes back as a rising senior, and he comes a day late. He decides to come back to five-star instead of going to the NBA players camp. And he comes, and he just shows how he's evolved as a player in this. He has just a whole other dimension to his game and his athleticism, his maturity. And then to see him continue this maturation process at Kentucky as an unselfish player that can turn it on when the team needs it, that understands what the team needs him to do when it's part of a great team instead of just being one-man show. And so when I look at John Wall, I feel a sense of a real sense of pride in seeing how this kid's evolved, and from someone nobody knew.
You know,
a lot of people didn't believe him.
I didn't check, but did you have Lance Stevenson at five star at any point? Cincinnati's freshman.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I've been reading about him since he was, I think, 13 or 14, so like eighth grade. But you could see physically he was to the point where he was just so much bigger than his competition, and you know, I guess I look back at this last year, and I think that there were some ups and some downs. His last game was pretty good in the tournament. But do you look at him and say there's an example that maybe the opposite of a John Wall, where he'd been on the scene, had that national reputation, but his body had already developed, so that maybe they get him an advantage, and perhaps he's not going to max out the way we thought he would 5 years ago?
Well, he continues to be successful being this power guard and competing. There's a lot of things he does that maybe aren't the prettiest. He doesn't have the prettiest jump shot or, you know, the greatest handle, but he's sure very, you know, surely effective because he just wills so much. He competes. He's tough. He's really a lot tougher than a lot of the, you know, a lot of maybe the more talented kids.
Mm-hmm.
When we had him before his eighth, you know, before he came into high school, with a lot of, you know, with great reputation, you could see physically where he was and this toughness. But I think that, you know, the things that lack in his game can all be developed. And once, you know, there's never really this window of time in today's era where you're always under the microscope, where everyone's analyzing everything you do, you don't get a real chance to work on your weaknesses. He will get that opportunity before when it's time to be in the NBA, work and spend some quality summers on his shooting and doing the things that he can do to really help perfect himself as a player.
Are there any players that you're surprised maybe later on in their career it didn't work out the way you thought it would once you had them at camp?
There are a lot. Some due to injuries, some due to a number of things. I mean, Lloyd Daniels, clearly one of the most talented players to ever play, and had a host of different issues that never got an opportunity on the court. But you see, you know, Lenny Cook is another great New York example. Tremendous talent that, you know, a good kid, a competitor that couple of bad decisions, an injury, and never, you know, never had this moment to play college basketball. And that's, you know, that's part of the real shame when you do have all the scrutiny on these high school kids today and how delicate it is. And it could go south in a hurry for some of them. And do they have the support network to enable them to be successful outside of the court?
Hey, final thought before we let you go here. You got a Final Four for us?
I do. I think we all sat there, you know, late last night, overanalyzing and thinking about it. And boy, that Midwest bracket is tough. I think here's what I got. I got Ohio State, Pittsburgh, Kentucky, and Duke, with Ohio State beating Kentucky for the championship.
Wow, you got Pittsburgh in there, huh?
Yeah, well, Jamie Dixon does just a tremendous job, and Ashton Gibbs is probably one of the best point guards in this, you know, in the country that people aren't talking about.
No, I've seen him live twice, and I know they were picked ninth in the Big East. They get a 3 seed. But I'm with you on Jamie Dixon, because when I look at the rest of the roster, I don't love it. I think Gilbert Brown's a talented kid, but he got off to that slow start this year because of, you know, being suspended away from the team a little bit. But Ashton is tough as can be. Talk about guys competing. One of the things you touched on at the very beginning, he competes all the time, but man, that would be remarkable. Jamie Dixon, they should take the Coach of the Year award away from Boeheim if he gets them to the Final Four and give it to Jamie Dixon.
Yeah, I mean, they've overachieved some, Pitt, but they, remember, you know, last year, it's that, the year after the fact, you know, they had the two great players. Everyone focused on last year. They, DeJuan Blair, Sam Young, two great, great players. You know, the rest of this cast, you know, they were there along for the ride. And I think it's, you're going to see guys step up and hopefully carry them far.
Well, Lee, I really appreciate your time here. You know, it's five stars, one of those things growing up you always heard about, and you're like, oh, this guy went to five star. That guy was up at five star. And, it's the premier basketball camp. As you mentioned, we look at those numbers from last year, 8 of the 10 starters in the championship game. So I know you've seen a lot of your guys throughout the rounds and in the Final Four. So we appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Okay, that'll do it for us. Tomorrow, special edition NBA Today podcast. I'm going to come in and do it on Tuesday, fix a franchise, and go over some of the stuff tonight. Don't miss the NBA on ESPN Radio, though. Two games this week. First up, the Spurs head to Orlando on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Then on Thursday, the Nuggets host the Hornets. Coverage tips at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. Talk to you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the NBA Today. Download more ESPN podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or on the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.